Empire.
You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
Are listening to the urban sports scene with Ray Jeezy and myself. Wole, I just wanted to say it. There's no Will T. What's going on? You're actually in the building.
I'm in person. I can't even describe how I feel right now, but it's not restaurant week. But it's a blessing to be in person. Real talk, man. Just grateful to be alive and grateful to still be able to do this with you. So
we're here, man.
Shout out to Wole.
Shout out to Wole.
And Will T. Will T, my man.
That's the man. That's the homie. Will T, definitely the man.
Will T, he ain't going to listen to this. So I could take some shots at him if I wanted to. But I'm not, though. I'm not picking games tonight, though. So
nobody's picking games tonight, so it's a boost, right?
Kind of gave Hakuna the Okie Doke last week, though. I pulled a Will T. I switched it up on him on Saturday night.
Did you really?
I did.
For real?
Yeah, I just want to see, you know, if Will T, his suspicions were correct, and I believe him now.
No,
I'm joking.
Don't be like Will T, man.
I'm straight up joking. I could care less.
It's like he don't get the collab aspect of what we doing.
It's all right. Will T, bless him.
Bless him, man. Hey, I forgot to mention we're part of Amppire Media, and you can check us out on Amppire Media at amppiremedia.com. Amppire Media hosts multiple DMV sports podcast shows, such as the John Kime Report, hosted by ESPN Washington Football Team insider John Kime, and Jones Football, hosted by USA Today insider Mike Jones. You can also subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the urban sports scene.
And, of course, the show can also be found on Podcast DC, the new local app with hundreds of options in local news and health in the DMV region. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all the Empire shows as well as other great content.
Don't forget to tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene, sports bloggers, sports podcasters, and sports debates. You know, it's hilarious. Every time, now we're going back and forth. Armand said, like, the locks thing, and now I'm thinking about that.
It's crazy.
Will T's not in the building, but I'll say it for him. Let's get into our tradition, the pregame. Here's what we have on tap. We'll recap the Washington Football Team losing to the Kansas City Chiefs 31-13 and their upcoming game against the Green Bay Packers. Seawall Sports and Entertainment's Candy Waller will join the show. Then finally, we'll feature our interview with NBC Sports Washington's Washington Wizards reporter Chase Hughes. Yesterday, we talked to him about the Wizards' season opener against the Raptors and much more. But right now, in the building, well, I guess not in the building, but right now we have Seawall Sports and Entertainment's Candy Waller on the line. What's good, Candy?
Hey, y'all. How y'all doing?
In person.
In person, right?
In person for the first time in a long time. I'll say that much. We had the Gary Russell interview, too. Shout out to the Russell family. But it's always good to have you. And it's not restaurant week, Candy, so we're going to have some fun, right?
Right. No trick questions about my favorite restaurant.
I know that's right.
Yeah, we're not going to do that. Not today.
I remember Carmine's, though. I ain't forgot about it.
Okay.
Carmine's like that. See, now we're doing it again.
I'm joking.
So, Candy, before we get into talking about the Washington Football Team, your show now airs on TV. Can you tell our listeners about your show?
Absolutely. So now my show airs. If you're in the Washington metropolitan area and you have not cut your cable and you have Verizon Fios or Comcast Xfinity, my shows can now be found every Friday on channel 11 if you have Fios, or channel 77 if you have Comcast Xfinity. Right. I have shows, Culture from the Couch, that is your DC sports edition that we run down all of DC sports. And then now there's also a show dedicated solely to the Washington Football Team called Culture from the Couch, the Washington Football Team Update, that comes on right after. So we're on from 1:30 to 2 for the DC sports edition, and from 2 to 2:30 on the Washington Football Team Update.
Sweet. That Triple Dub Pod coming back too soon, right? Or it already came back?
The pod is about to be heating up.
I know that's right.
Hey, Hey, man, know what I was thinking, Ray and Candy? I was thinking that, you know, since we're doing YouTube stuff, we should try to link up with the Triple Dub Pod and just do like a show about the Wizards. Like, just you know, just a show.
I love it. Let's do it.
I know that's right.
You know what I'm saying?
Live at Carmine's. Let's get
live at Carmine's.
Look, it's not Carmine's, but listen, or we could do it live at Carmine's, right? Because hey, listen, like I as long as I really review the Wizards roster, because I'm like, who plays on the dead?
Oh yeah, you focus on Washington football. Nothing wrong with that.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. Definitely not at all. So all right, so Sunday the Washington, you were in the building. So Sunday the Washington football team retired the jersey of Sean Taylor. There was a lot of controversy about the ceremony. Can you tell you what were your thoughts on the ceremony with Sean Taylor? I mean, the tribute to Sean Taylor.
So let me start off by saying, much like, you know, probably all of you and all of the listeners, I was a huge Sean Taylor fan. Humongous. It truly, you know, broke my heart and so many others when he was taken away from us too soon. And so it was like that moment was a moment I had been waiting for. Like I was anticipating the day they would retire his jersey and really do a tribute and dedication to Sean Taylor. So I know there was a lot of, as we all know, a lot of controversy with it just being found out at 3 days' notice, all of that. I want to tell you, it even though the organization said they had been planning this for months, it didn't seem like it. Like, it it really didn't seem like it. It seemed like something that was thrown together. The tribute video was nice. I enjoyed it, but it could have been a lot longer than that. It was like a smooth minute and 20 seconds. It wasn't, you know. It was enough, though. I think it's important to mention this. His family was visibly emotional after that tribute and after the video and everything. But it still, from my perspective, just wasn't enough. You know, while the video was running, on the screens, the Kansas City Chiefs ran out the tunnel. Like, did they not know to wait? You know, like, maybe no one told them, like, this is a special event. Let's wait and hold off on all of the, you know, everything. And you all coming out. And so I don't think it was intentionally disrespectful. I know, of course, there was a lot of the reports about Jackson Mahomes dancing on the 21. I have conflicting views on that. Yes, you know, I can definitely confirm that that is where they were told to stand.
Oh, okay. They were okay.
Yes. But it's still kind of like you should have known.
Yeah.
Like you just should not have stood there. Like you should have just like known. It was just like a complete lack of awareness on all parts. It could have been better. It could have been better. It just seemed like it was something that maybe they were planning it and they forgot somebody dropped the ball, but it absolutely looked like somebody forgot and dropped the ball.
Candy, I have a question that has not been asked yet, and that's this. Think about it. If Washington entered this game undefeated, of course, that would have brought more fans to the stadium. Would the time frame have really mattered? Right now, I think we're piling on to an organization that people are pretty angry at. So what would your take would have been if it was still 3 days' notice, but this football team was playing dominant football?
That's a good point.
That's a great question. People may not have cared. You know, I think, to your point, this is just a fed-up fan base. Everybody's just mad. They're just mad. And, you know, I touched on this a bit on the Washington football team update show last week, where a lot of, you know, fans and media, you know, all of us together are really looking at coaching and what's going on. But it's like the same thing for the last 25 years. 30, you know. We always mad at the coach. We always mad at the quarterback.
Yeah.
Everybody's mad. And I think timing of the emails with Bruce Allen and John Gruden, you know, the stories about former Washington employees being bribed. And, you know, the DEA just ran up in Ashburn a few weeks ago. But then, you know, I'm like, that's the story nobody's talking about. Like, are we going to talk about the DEA running up in there? People are just, they're just tired. And you're right. Everything is just a pile on. It's like it just gets worse. And this was supposed to be, you know, could have been a feel good moment for fans, especially with it being such low attendance. But because it's just another thing, people are just weren't happy.
You know what? I do believe that everything you're saying is 100% accurate. It's unfortunate that we continue to have this same discussion about this franchise. And on top of that, Candy, they lost the game. But my thought coming into the week was Coach Rivera did not set a good tone by saying something to the effect that I almost wish we didn't make the playoffs last season. I feel like that showed right there I don't have confidence in my squad. Do you think that hurt the team going in? And what were your thoughts on the overall performance against Kansas City?
I you know, here's the thing with that comment that Coach Rivera made. And like in my family, sometimes we say, you know, it's only bad if it isn't true, right? So it's like, all right, I agree with Ron. Now, what I don't agree with is that he said it out loud. Like, he should not have said that out loud. He's absolutely correct. But it just should not have been said out loud. I think, you know, Ron, perhaps Coach Rivera was getting, what was getting next to him is all of the noise, all of the questions. You know, last week, some of those pressers, in my opinion, Coach Rivera was visibly frustrated with the questions he was getting from media about coaching changes and scheme changes and all that. He was sick of those questions. This week, he admittedly said, maybe it's time for me to change my approach. Sitting in the stadium on Sunday and seeing just the downfall in 30 minutes, right? I mean, you go into the half, the team is, you know, they're only up by 3 points, right? 13-10. Everybody knows Patrick Mahomes is a pro at being resilient. He can bounce back. Even when he's having a terrible game, he can bounce back. He can make things happen. He can get the football into the end zone for 6 points, and then they get the extra point to make it 7. He does that. The team just fell apart. They just did. And it was so, it was like, even in the press box, everybody just got quiet. It was like all the media was defeated too. Like, everybody talked. Like, it was eerily quiet. Like, wow. It just snowballed.
That's unfortunate. I just used what you said to try to create a new hashtag. Hashtag fed up at FedEx.
Yes, fed up at FedEx.
That is wild. So in your game that lost, then what was your biggest issue with the loss then?
That they fell apart in that way. It was like they just lost. They didn't do anything else. And like literally, it was like, did somebody tell them they had won at halftime? And then they just stopped playing. And it was, you know, I think the most disappointing thing of seeing is that we're seeing things, that we're seeing them not do things that is just fundamentally incorrect. Like how, like these missed tackles and just how they're tackling. It's like, what are you doing? I thought they don't teach that in Little League.
Like, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's wild. Cause Ray, now I mean, we talked about this on our post game show. Right after the game, and we talked about the poor tackling. You know, that was something that was just atrocious. You know, just like you said, like the things that bother me, especially in the second half. Forget, you know, I thought they did what they had. Like in terms of first half, they competed. Like it's all about, and Ray knows this. We always talk about this on the show. Is when you play against a superior team. You just want to compete. Forget the outcome of a game. You want to compete. So in the first half, they competed. The second half, like you stated, there were a lot of poor play. I feel like to a certain extent, it's all about how your opposition respects you, as you know, respects the opponent. I thought Patrick Mahomes threw a lot of junk passes because he didn't respect his opponent. Like we're talking about that one situation where he's basically falling down, and he just throws the ball up. I feel like that's an element of not respecting your opponent. I don't think he throws that pass against, say, the Buffalo Bills, or he throws that same pass against the Baltimore Ravens, a team that, you know, that are competing for, you know, a championship or competing at the highest level. But it's Washington. Their secondary sucks. The teams can't check nothing. So he feels like, you know, because the team they're playing against, hey, I can make a play on this. Like, I can take a chance. So, I mean, I think a lot of things happened for Washington to get that lead. And then a lot of folks, you know, even on Twitter, they stated, like, Washington ain't take the lead. It was the Kansas City wasn't playing their best football. But I'm with you. Like, I just want to compete. You know, I don't care about the wins and losses. I want to see this team compete.
Right. Right. They're clearly defeated. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. It's I've been trying to piece it together because sometimes I'll say to myself, okay, Coach Rivera is blowing smoke. Like, the stuff that he's saying to the media mm-hmm. is probably not what he's saying to the team. But now I'm starting to think maybe he is saying that to the team, and that's why there's no improvement.
Yeah, and I agree. I think so. I mean, to me, like, Coach Rivera, and you talked about what you said earlier about the 7-9 being factual. I mean, it's only factual when you're losing. You know what I mean? Like, it's only factual when you're losing, because I said this on the post-game show, because we talked about it, like, right after.
Right.
If he believed that they weren't that good, like 7-9, this team wasn't going to be that good, then he wouldn't have signed a Fitzpatrick. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's levels to this. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're going to improve your team. If you felt like your team was, like, an okay team at 7-9, you're not going to say, I'm signing Fitzpatrick and I'm going to stay 7-9. Like, you're trying to improve the product. You're trying to improve the brand. So, if you believe that your team wasn't that close from being at a certain level, there's certain statements you wouldn't have said. For instance, you wouldn't say that when we played the Buccaneers the best in the playoffs and they won the Super Bowl. That says to me that you believe your team was decent. You know what I mean? Like, there's things you, like, the mis-messaging. Like, that's why I'm like, all right, you can't say this, but then when you're losing and you're not playing good football, you can't just say now, oh, man, I wish I was 7-9 and get into the postseason. Like, it just goes, your messaging is all off. Now that your team isn't playing the way that you thought they were capable of playing, now, and you want to put the blame on, we weren't, maybe our talent, basically saying that your talent isn't good enough to be better than what it is right now. To me, if you want to keep, if you were a competitor and you know, and you've been keeping this same messaging, you really should put it on yourself as a coach or your coaching staff. If you may not even want to put it on yourself, but you got to put it on the coaches.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Do y'all remember last season? I think it was after he pulled Dwayne Haskins. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of conversation about that. And I think that was, what, after week 4? I think.
A little further, they played, was it week 4?
It was around that time.
Week 4, week 5. So I was waiting to see if they were going to make a quarterback change. They did. I figured they
Kyle
weren't.
Kyle Allen, New York.
I was waiting to see, right? Yeah. But then I remember last year, it was right around that week 4, week 5 time when Dak Prescott got hurt. You know, the Eagles were having issues with Carson Wentz. It was going through their, you know, locker room issues. The Giants, who got hurt? Saquon Barkley got hurt. And they had somebody else hurt. And that's what Coach Rivera was like. You know, he made a decision that they can go at least after the division. Yeah. And I always remembered that because I said Coach Rivera made that decision basically because the star players on every other team in the division was hurt. Or they were having issues. That ain't what's happening right now. Like, not with Dallas. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. He knows they're in trouble. He knows. Now, I wholeheartedly agree with you guys. There's definitely been some mixed messaging.
Yeah.
Because you're essentially dealing with some of the same team. Now on defense, that's completely different from a secondary perspective. The only person who's returned from last year, from a full season last year, is Cameron Curl, and he's in a different position. And they are not good. Like, they're not good together. Like,
yeah.
And I don't even know. I think William Jackson is playing in a different position and what he was in a different scheme and what he was used to in Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. I do believe they have Landon Collins playing in the box more. At least he was on Sunday.
Oh yeah, Sunday they finally did. Sunday they finally had him playing in the box.
They finally
enough,
did that.
Enough. They did enough of it. Put it that way.
Exactly. And so, but it's like you watch it, and it's still like, it was a great point that you all made earlier about Patrick Mahomes, and he's not just going to throw that pass up in the air under pressure like that against a top level defense. He's just not.
He's made some errant throws this year. I get where you're coming from, though. But like someone said early in the week, it was unforced errors. Tyreek Hill usually catches that ball. Yeah. It went off his hands. Patrick Mahomes usually doesn't make that play. So Washington's defense did not necessarily create turnovers, even though they played better in the first half of that game. But, Candy, first of all, my bad. You're listening to the Urban Sports Team. You're part of Empire Media, empiremedia.com. We, of course, are chatting with Candy Waller from Seawall Sports and Entertainment. And you have your second elite quarterback coming up on the schedule this week in Aaron Rodgers. You're going to Green Bay. For the first time this whole season, at least from my vantage point, I've seen the noise around Scott Turner's play calling become an issue for all fans, even those who are, you know, I'll call them Scott Turner stans. But what I want to say is the reason why I mention him is because if you run the ball, you keep these elite quarterbacks off the football, off the field. So what's your expectations going into Green Bay? Does this team have a chance to win?
I guess they say every inning. You know,
don't do that.
You don't sound confident.
Candy, don't do that, Candy. Don't do that.
You don't sound confident.
Don't do that. Don't, keep it a buck. You say, just say no.
I don't think they have a chance. I don't. Like, I'm really sitting there. I was sitting there on Sunday like, they might not win another game all season. Like, they might.
Oh,
like,
dang.
They might, I mean, that's what we up
the,
against.
The press media. That's who you're speaking on behalf of right now. She said the like, press box sounded.
Like, whoa, like this is bad. And Aaron Rodgers loves to pick apart defenses. Like, he gets a rise out of it.
Yeah, he do.
Gotta run the ball.
I love his swag, man. His swag is real when it comes swag. To it.
Keep him on the field.
Ain't it
I love his swag. I ain't gonna lie. Aaron Rodgers is like, I used to like not like Aaron Rodgers as much. Now he's just growing on me.
Even though he looks like he has like a drug habit or something now. Like, wow, how does he age so bad? Between like off seasons, I'm just saying that's separate though. But he's awesome.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers is cool.
The whole Bears swagger was awesome.
It was, man. I own you.
Yeah, but I definitely think Taylor Heineke's got to get better with his accuracy. His arm strength is visibly weak.
Can't teach that now.
Yeah,
that's not going to be fixed. Just like Tim Tebow, you know, you just got to play to his strengths. Play to his strengths.
His ain't horrible.
It's his arm strength.
His arm strength is bad. Like, it's not good. And you ain't, like Ray said, you ain't teaching that. That's God-given. And you don't got that, bro. That you just don't have it.
And he bulked up, too.
Yeah, and he got stronger. So they just don't have it, man. Some people just.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Keep him off the field. Got to keep A-Rod off that field.
Yeah, they got to find a way to keep him off
the field. Yeah, and this is the thing. Like, we just literally watched last night. And, I mean, there's two separate backs. I'm like, this is the best back in football. In Henry, but we literally saw like the Titans, like they will serve this dude 24/7 and make you stop him. I know this dude can't hold up. It seems like he can't hold up in Antonio Gibson. But if even when he's doing well, like they'll go away from him. They won't even keep utilizing him and just going to the well with Antonio Gibson, knowing that he's a productive back for this football team. Or you can always you got three dudes on your team, well, two for real that are proven commodities in Gibson and McKissick for this season that have, in most games, will average over 4 yards a carry, you know, as a tandem. And you don't, and you still want to throw the football like 100 times. Like, I just, man, is this a Scott Turner thing again, Ray? Am I about to do a Scott Turner bit? I feel like I'm about to get on Scott Turner again. Every freaking show I get on Scott Turner. But it's just really like this whole coaching staff, like, I feel like this team could be so much better. And I'm not saying they'd be world beaters, but so much better if they could just, like, if the coaches wouldn't get out their own way. Like, I just, this arrogance of people who coach these dudes up. Like, we talk about Landon Collins. It took Landon Collins, like, forever to be in the box. He was basically the linebacker on Sunday after he got beat on that pass to get the Chiefs to the red zone. After that pass, they damn near had him at linebacker most of the game. Yep. He played okay when he was playing linebacker. But it took him that long to do it. Like, what's up with the arrogance? Like, you're going against Aaron Rodgers, man. Like, you were going against Pat Mahomes. To me, you should have had this thought process against Pat Mahomes. Like, this shouldn't even take you long. Like, you going against Pat Mahomes, arguably when people have already made, like, the best quarterback in the NFL. Not to say that's true or whatever, but folks have called him the best quarterback in the NFL. Now you're, like, and you couldn't do it. You were stubborn to not even start with that game plan against Pat Mahomes. You're going against Aaron Rodgers. Bruh, like, there's no need to be stubborn anymore. Like, you're going against A-Rod, man. This is the dude with the belt. You know what I'm saying? He do the belt. He do the belt gesture. You're like, you gotta nah, man. Like, come on, Coach Staff. Come on, Del Rio. Come on, Scott Turner. Like, is it, to me, I'm gonna be real. If they get the same type of performance over the next this game, some people gotta lose their jobs. They gotta lose their jobs.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not, you know, you watch other teams play, right? And that's probably like I love the sport so much, that's because where I become a glutton for punishment, because I'm watching all the other teams fall out, and even the pace of the game is different. But the coaching staff, they're playing to win.
Yes.
You're going out there and you are playing to win. I'm not real certain what this whole passive attitude is that the coaching staff has. That's another thing that I've been questioning and trying to figure out. Why are they so passive? What is that about? Because I even tweeted at halftime on Sunday, like I said at the beginning of this show, everybody knows Patrick Mahomes is resilient.
Yeah.
He can make it happen even when he has a bad day.
Yeah.
He can put up points on the scoreboard. Mm-hmm. Why not come out aggressive? It was like they did the exact opposite. Like I said, like somebody had told them, you guys are doing great, keep doing the same thing, we got the game in the bag. Like, who doesn't know that Patrick Mahomes is aggressively strong in the second half? Like, that's what he does.
Yeah, obviously it's the coaches that know that don't know. They know, they just, like, they have this whole idea of being a squad that's less aggressive, right? You got something to say?
Real quick, listen to this, Candy. Big Cat on Twitter, which is hilarious to me, he posted the NFL power rankings of teams with two wins. This is hilarious. So he got the Colts at number one, the Patriots at number two, the 49ers at three, the Eagles number four, the Falcons at five, who Washington beat, Washington six, and Seattle seven. Ahead of Seattle, which
I don't know about that.
But how
that list is bad.
Washington went from Mike Greenberg's Super Bowl pick to six on the two-win power rankings.
That's a bad list.
Your thoughts on that?
That's a bad list. You got to admit, that's a bad list.
I'm just saying.
When he said that the Seattle over, like, Washington over Seattle.
And wow, Atlanta, so you're going to put up seven?
Okay, Atlanta so. over Washington be Atlanta. Like, that's a bad one.
Okay, so we go, but they would still be a six,
it's
though.
It's still bad. At least be over Atlanta.
Atlanta would be seventh, yes. Because Seattle's ahead of Atlanta.
Yeah, facts. Yeah.
No, so they would still be sixth.
Six. You're right. What am I talking about? You're still sixth.
So how do we get to this point? Everything we're talking about now. But I know we were joking about it. Any given Sunday, it's a lot of football left to be played. Let's see what happens. But, Candy, what's your final score for Sunday?
She went to
I'm being nice, and I'll give it 30-20.
30-20, dang, you got against 20. They couldn't even score 13 against Kansas City. That's tough. Are you being real nice? I know I'm with you. I feel like you gotta paint it to the fan base. I know what you're doing. It's good. I feel it, and I dig it. I dig it. Did Green Bay getting 30? I mean, we can all admit that they getting 30. I can't tell you what Washington's going to get, so I don't even know if they can get. I guess they can give you slightly more than 13, maybe 16. The way, I don't know. I think folks are starting, and Ray has said this, and I think somebody else has said this before, and we're about to kind of have to close the segment out a little bit. But teams are starting to figure out Taylor Heineke, so there's something they're going to have to do. They're going to have to change something up. Teams are starting to.
There's just enough, and I'm going to tell you, I'm going to throw this out there. I know we got to close out. Mm-hmm. Teams are starting to figure out Antonio Gibson, too. I talked about this on the Washington football team update. He makes me so nervous with his handling of the football.
Well, he's always been loose. He's loose. He's so loose.
He's too loose.
Yeah.
And these linebackers and defensive backs on other teams, they know exactly where to hit him to get the ball out of his hands.
No, I agree. He's very loose with the football. He's been like that for a while. And, again, you're talking about a receiver playing running back. It's a different skill to it. I think people got to start just because you may have a certain size, a different skill level of how to protect the football. You got guys who've been running football for forever. Like Tiki Barber was awesome in Virginia, awesome in he was awesome in the NFL. But it took him time to learn how to protect the football. And we're talking about one of the better running backs in his era. So that's something he won't really have to work on because. They won't have to get that situated. But, Candy, appreciate you for being on. But, again, let our folks know how they can hit you up on social media and tell them about your show that's, you know, that's on Facebook and also now on TV. You got it on TV in PG County.
Yep. No, thank you, guys. I appreciate it as always. But, folks, you all can find me on Twitter at Seawall SE, on Instagram at Seawall Sports, and on Facebook at Seawall Sports and Entertainment. You can catch the Washington football team update Monday evenings on Facebook Live, the DC Sports Weekly Edition, your recap of all DC sports on Thursdays at 7:30 on Facebook. And then on Fridays, you can catch both shows, Verizon, Fios, subscribers. You can catch it on Channel 11 and Comcast Xfinity. You can catch it on Channel 77, 1:30 to 2:30. Yeah, 1:30 to 2:30 is when the shows air.
That's dope. Well, Candy, appreciate you for being on. Well, we're going to have you back on. You already know it. We're going to try to do this Wizards thing.
Yes, absolutely. Let us know when it's ready.
All right, bet. All right, Candy, take it easy.
Guys.
Bye. Bye-bye. Again, that was Candy Waller from Seawall Sports and Entertainment. Follow her on Twitter at Seawall SE. That's at Seawall SE. All right. When we come back from break, we'll play our interview with NBC Sports Washington's Wizards reporter Chase Hughes about the Wizards season opener. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene for Aegis. You dig? Deuces. Are listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Ray Jeezy and myself, Wole. Will T is out. We're also part of Amp Pyre Media. That you can catch us at amppyremedia.com. All right, so yesterday, Ray and I interviewed NBC Sports Washington's Washington Wizards reporter Chase Hughes. And the start of the season, which the Wizards are playing the Toronto Raptors tomorrow, and also some of the changes this team made. We're going to play that interview right now. Take a listen.
Right now, we have NBC Sports Washington Wizards reporter Chase Hughes on the show. What's up, Chase? Welcome to the Urban Sports Scene. It's a blessing you finally joined us, man.
Yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to finally be on the show because I know you guys have been at it for a long time, doing a great job.
Appreciate it.
Awesome, man. Awesome. So let's jump right into it. The NBA season is beginning on tomorrow, or at the time of this recording, it's on tomorrow, Tuesday. And right now, we're seeing a lot of changes, of course, across the league. But with this Wizards team, changing coach, changing personnel. When Brooks was the coach, he was always a great interview, nice guy. But there was never any drama around the team or anything, at least from my vantage point. So is there any different vibe with all these changes with the new players, new coach? What's the team looking like? What's the environment like there at Capital One now?
Well, there's a lot more practice and more shoot-arounds. You know, that's kind of something that we saw early in Scott Brooks' tenure. Now, granted, a lot changed in the world, and there weren't very many off days last year to practice, but definitely in the last 2 years, even before the pandemic, they weren't practicing very much. Sometimes it was due to injury, but I know that that's affected me personally because I have to go to the practice facility, so we're going there a lot more often. And, they're having two-a-day practices and training camp, basically trying to have a lot more discipline and instill just a lot more structure. Chris Miller, my colleague, always has great nicknames for everything he says, that Club Med is over. And that's basically been the vibe, wow. I think. It's been very professional, very structured. And, you know, we'll see if that translates to the court, because obviously in the preseason, there was a lot that they need to clean up. But that's what I would say is the biggest difference so far in terms of the vibe. Wes Unseld Jr., just in general, is also just a very good interviewer. He has not been a head coach before, but he handles himself really well in press conferences. I've been really impressed. You know, you go back and transcribe his words, and he's just dropping knowledge left and right about the game of basketball, and I personally appreciate that.
Wow. So that's dope. From a personnel standpoint, you know, how do you think the new players are developing chemistry? And it's Tommy that brought in these new guys. I think he gets a pretty high grade considering the moves he made, moving that contract with John first. Now, Russ, so do you expect the team to hire a president of basketball operations or this Tommy ship moving forward?
Well, first on the personnel, I think a different difference in the vibe has also been just they have so many professional veterans now. You know, they still have a pretty decent nucleus of young players with like Denny Abdia and Rui Hachimura and Daniel Gafford. But the collective group is just – there's just a lot more depth in terms of proven veterans. So guys like Montrezl Harrell and Kyle Kuzma and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Spencer Dinwiddie, the way they talk about how they practice and how they dissect film, I think the team is leveled up in that regard just in terms of the quantity of professional veterans. We'll see, again, how it translates to the court. They're playing in a tougher conference. You know, they went from two stars to one. So it's, and they gotta get a lot of these guys on the same page under a new coaching staff. So it's not going to be easy. It might take some time, but I think Tommy Shepherd does deserve some praise. Certainly when you look at all the different steps he took from starting with the John Wall Supermax contract and where they are now and the flexibility that they have moving forward. Obviously they lost a really good player in Russell Westbrook. I think he did a good job with the initial trade. But now they've got more depth and they've got more mid-level contracts. So I think he's got the right ingredients to build a really good team. I think certainly there's more to evaluate in terms of his tenure. It's almost like someone who just got back from Whole Foods with a lot of really good ingredients. Now they got to cook the meal. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, like, definitely.
Like another metaphor would be like they demoed the kitchen and now they just got back from Home Depot or Lowe's. But now it's almost like the hardest part. Like I can demo. I can knock down a wall with a sledgehammer. My brother is a contractor. He knows how to actually make a kitchen look nice. I can't do that. So they've kind of arrived at the toughest stage. But I wrote this, you know, at the end of last season. You got to make good moves. You have to make a lot of good moves and kind of stack your chips. And I think he's done that. You know, there's just a quantity of good moves between the Daniel Gafford trade. And, you know, I think Denny Abdia and Rui Hachimura are pretty good picks and Corey Kispert and, you know, some of the guys he acquired this offseason. I think at some point, if they stay on this path, he's going to be able to put it all together. But it just sorry to answer your last question. I don't foresee any major changes to the front office anytime soon. You know, they have him and Sashi Brown in place, but you are going into the third year of what they did. And the Wizards had a consultant before they overhauled their front office who was on the record recently with Bleacher Report saying that he tells team owners and team governors and chairman that you got to give it 3 years before you know what you had. And so that quote, it didn't pertain to the Wizards, but he probably told Ted Leonsis the same thing, right? So I think this third year is an important one for him.
So like to me, Ray, you got something you want to say? I guess maybe not. For me, looking at obviously Bradley Beal's the centerpiece of the squad. He is the star. He's the guy. How is he vibing with his new teammates? Because you know he's got Kyle Kuzma, Montrezl Harrell. These are different personalities as well. So how is he vibing with his teammates, his new teammates?
I think he really likes the direction they're heading in. You know, I think he appreciates the fact that the team is really trying to design a roster around him. I think they did a good job kind of complementing his strengths and maybe filling in the gaps around him, you know, defensively, more guys who can shoot, more guys who can create off the dribble. So he should have more space on offense. And I think fewer responsibilities on defense, which even though he could be a capable defender, you know, in the right matchup. But certainly you don't want to see him guarding Jason Tatum or Tobias Harris, someone who's like 5 inches taller than him like he did last year. So I think he appreciates that. You know, they happen to bring in a lot of guys that he gets along with pretty well. You know, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has been like one of his best friends since high school. Spencer Dinwiddie was a move that, you know, he was a big fan of. I think they really get along personality-wise. So I think what they've done is they've really moved the organization in Beal's direction and kind of built a roster around him that should be able to augment his strengths. And I think what the net result of that is going to be is that even more so than in the past, their results are going to be tied to Bradley Beal. I think if they win, he's going to get a lot of praise. But also if they lose, I think people are going to be like, well, you know, we saw the numbers when you're on a bad team. Now you've got some help. You know, you should be winning some games. So I think this team's going to be tied to him more so than ever before.
So there's been a lot of noise around Brad since he's been on this team, of course. As he's grown into the star player he is now, you had Westbrook trying to advise him to move on. You got so many trade rumors that involve his name, but yet he seems committed. However, he has not re-signed yet. Are the Wizards, are they gambling too much with waiting on his decision? And what do you think he's going to do? What's the vibe around just Bradley Beal alone? Because I think he wants to be the guy that leads this team to a deep playoff run. I don't think championship is his number one priority, because based on what he said, deep playoff run is his goal right now. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, a deep playoff run would keep him happy and make him want to stay. You know, he doesn't want to jump to a super team. He's 28. He can, I've always said, like, he's 28. He could get that next contract. And then, like, a year into it, decide he wants out. You know, you get the money, you know, you secure yourself.
Ben making, Simmons.
Yeah, $400 to $500 million, and then you get out, you know, kind of like he doesn't have to do it yet. He's only 28. You know, he should have many years left in his prime. So as far as the extension, the Wizards have made the offer, but I'm getting the sense that they don't really expect him to sign it, or at least not anytime soon. And that's going to create a really interesting situation. And first of all, I say that because I was talking to someone in the front office the other night, and they kind of described it as a formality, kind of like, we gave him the contract, but let's be honest, he can make a lot more money if he waits. And when I heard that, I was like,
wow,
okay, that kept it real, and it kind of set the expectation for me. And I was a little bit apprehensive to set the expectation going into this, because we did that last time and he could have waited and potentially made more money. And of course he signed the deal. So I didn't really know which way to go on it. I thought maybe he would sign the deal, but after hearing that, as you can see, I'm on the fence myself. After hearing that, I think he'll wait. And that's going to create a situation where, you know, if they get off to a slow start, you know, you think the trade rumors have been bad in the past, just like wait until that happens. Or if they get off to a hot start, then maybe he's more inclined to sign it. But obviously, this has all been in theory to a certain extent. As you approach that trade deadline, it's going to be decision time. They're going to have to make a decision, because you can't let that guy just go for nothing in free agency. If you're the Wizards and, you know, you haven't had much luck in free agency, and there's no guarantee you can find someone as good as him, even in the draft. Yeah. So I think this is a month to month thing. And, you know, we're in October. You asked me in January or February, things could get a lot more interesting by then.
Wow. Yeah, I'm going to keep my thoughts to myself for now on that. But you know what? I hate.
You think they should trade him?
No, when you dangle the name Ben Simmons out there and you don't have a commitment, man, Ben Simmons with this current roster, with the wings, with the shooting, I think, and his size, defense, we're talking defense, which has been a weakness of this team. That's a tempting offer for me personally. You know what I mean? I'm not Tommy, but this franchise seems committed. And I want to ask this. I hate to bring it up. I really do. But in Brooklyn, obviously New York is a different situation, but the Nets are like, we're not offering Kyrie an extension if he's not going to get vaccinated. It's like, it's no point. But Brad, he's maintained his stance, which is his choice. You know, I respect it personally. But the Wizards are still all in on him. What does that say about Washington? And are they just naive, or they really want Bradley Beal to be the centerpiece of this franchise moving forward? Because I would think that would affect his status moving forward in terms of a contract extension. You agree?
Yeah. I mean, I think when it comes to the Wizards and Bradley Beal, it's very different than a lot of other franchises, because he's legitimately one of the best players in franchise history. And they know it's really difficult to get a player like him. You know, you could get 5 first round picks back and not find a 30-point scorer in that mix. Yeah, I mean, it's really, really difficult to do. And beyond that, I mean, he's really like the perfect face of the franchise in terms of how he, you know, handles himself off the court. I mean, within the community, I mean, he's absolutely perfect. Like, if you were to come up with a prototype for a face of the franchise, he's perfect. And also, I think that the way I've defended it, especially in recent years, when everyone was saying, you got to trade him. I don't blame them for wanting to see where this goes, because if you look at his trajectory, he's probably on the cusp of being a top 10 player right now. Of course, he made all NBA last year. If he made another leap, then you're talking about top 8, maybe top 5 player in the league. And if you look at James Harden when he was at this age, it was like right before he became an MVP. So if you design a roster around him and maybe a system around him like James Harden had, there's no guarantee that he'll make that leap because James Harden literally became one of the best scorers of all time. But I think it would be a shame if you traded him and then he became that guy. So if you go into the season and you see him taking another leap, then maybe you'll be rewarded for that. If you see him plateau, then, you know, maybe it's fair to question about whether he's worth 235, 240 million or whatever, because, you know, you look around the league. Yes, a lot of guys can qualify for that contract, but realistically, very few are the types of players where you give that contract and you're not going to regret it. Like Giannis, you're not going to regret it. A lot of these guys, you don't, but there's really not that many players that are on that level. And Bradley Beal's kind of right on the line. So I think it's wait and see. And I think they hope and they're banking on him getting even better than he is right now.
Harden, you mentioned that James Harden name, because James Harden is a whole different animal because he passes the ball a lot more too. When people talk about James Harden, they see the 30-point scoring, but they forget he's a willing passer. He is such a willing passer.
And he's a good passer too.
Yes, he really is. All right, so let's get right to the game on Wednesday, season opener, which is take on the Toronto Raptors. What should fans expect to see from the team in that game?
Well, hopefully better defense than they saw in the preseason.
Exactly.
Because the Wizards were, you know, they've been talking defense, and then they had the worst defensive rating of any team. They gave up the highest three-point percentage and the most threes. And it was like, you know, 43% from three, and they're giving up like 17 threes a game. Like, those are historic numbers. Like, you're not going to win very many games doing that. And so I think with the Raptors, what they have is a really good early season test, because the Raptors, though they've got a lot of holdovers from last year, there's also some mystery surrounding them, and they're kind of in the same tier as the Wizards. Everyone's wondering, like, okay, was it just the fact that they had to play in Tampa last year and they had some injuries and they had a COVID outbreak? Are they still, you know, a top four or five team in the East? And they added Scottie Barnes, who looked really impressive in the preseason when I saw him the other night. You know, they've got OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet. And of course they lost Lowry, but Dragic was killing the Wizards just like he always does in that game. So I think it'll be a good test, like a good early season baseline test for the Wizards, where it's like, all right, are they on the Raptors level? Okay, are the Raptors better? If the Raptors are better, is it because the Wizards aren't very good, or the Raptors are all of a sudden back in the top upper echelon of the Eastern Conference? So I think in that sense, it's going to be really interesting to see. You know, certainly individual performances will be interesting to watch. Like, you know, Denny Avdia, does he look better than he did last year? Which of these veterans that they brought in can kind of reclaim the magic they had of just a few years ago? Like Montrezl Harrell, Caldwell Pope, Dinwiddie, Kuzma, a lot of these guys put up bigger numbers not that long ago. They had to adjust to different roles. So maybe one of those guys will kind of benefit from a fresh start. But I think overall it's the defense, because you got Wes Unseld, you got the defensive personnel. But as we know in this town, you guys are Washington football team fans, and the Wizards have done this too. Sometimes they talk the talk and they can't walk the walk.
That's crazy. Like you mentioned, like about the Toronto Raptors roster, because before the show even started, Ray and I were talking, and I was saying that I think the Wizards have more talent than the Raptors when you look at the players they did bring to their team. And it would be all, to me, predicated on coaching and see how they get these guys together. Because, again, you have Bill, who's, like you mentioned, one of the top players in this game. Kuzma, who, if he plays smart, is a good scorer. I think Harold is a beast. I think Montrez, the Lakers used him incorrectly. I'm a Lakers fan, and they used him incorrectly. So I noticed they used him incorrectly. I don't know what coach was doing with Harold, because Harold is, to me, could be such a steal for the Wizards if used correctly, especially coming off the bench. I think he can do so many things for the Wizards. So I think the Wizards, this is a good game for the Wizards to kind of showcase their new team.
Yeah, Harrell's interesting to me because I've always liked his game. You know, he's such like a blue collar player, and you know, he's a scorer now, and he does so efficiently even without shooting threes. But you just know you never have to worry about his effort from night to night. And obviously, he didn't have a great year in LA. He'll tell you that. He thinks he wasn't utilized correctly.
Facts.
But if you look at and this is just one measure, but if you look at the preseason player rankings going into last year. So everything was kind of equal for these guys, because like Dinwiddie was coming off his best year. Harrell was coming off his best year. You know, other guys were younger, you know, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and he was coming off a good year. Montrezl Harrell was ranked pretty easily as the highest rated player on that team, like higher than Dinwiddie, which surprised me. I was looking at like the Washington Post rankings. So it's not that we're not that far removed from everyone understanding that Montrezl Harrell was a really good player and probably like a top 50, maybe top 60 player in the NBA. And like people have talked about the center rotation and how that's going to sort out. And I'm a huge fan of Daniel Gafford's game. And I think Thomas Bryant is going to come back strong. And I think they really missed his 3-point shooting last year. But I almost feel like Harrell's the safest bet to be the most consistent guy in that rotation. Like, I don't think you're going to be able to take him out of the rotation. Last year he fell out of the rotation in LA, but they had championship aspirations and they had the number one defense in the NBA. The bar, although it's going to be higher than it's been in recent years, like, it might not be so high defensively that he's not going to be able to stay on the court. I think he's going to be a tough guy for Wes Unseld to take out of the game, to take out of the rotation, because he's always going to give you that effort.
The defense thing in LA was a scapegoat thing, and it was a scapegoat. He's not – there are worse defenders. There were worse defenders on that squad than Montrez, to be honest with you. I think that defense thing was – they were trying to use that as an excuse. He brings a lot of effort, which I really respect. So what are the Wizards – so to the Wizards lineup, knowing that Rui was going through mental mental health issues and whatnot, but now, you know, he's back. How is his positioning going to be on the starting unit? You got Kuz who completely play the stretch four too. Now he can play the 3 or the stretch four. You got Rui. Both are kind of like similar in a way, kind of, but not that much in terms of height and whatnot. What's the choice in lineups with between Rui and Kyle Kuzma?
Well, certainly to start out, I think Kuzma will be at the four and KCP at the three.
Okay.
And you know, going into the season, Tommy Shepard said that he thought that Rui Hachimura's role as the starting power forward was safe. So unless Unseld feels differently or something, you know, happened behind the scenes where Kuzma really impressed or something, I think Rui's going to take over that starting power forward spot when he returns. He's never come off the bench in his NBA career, I'm pretty sure. You know, he started as a starter, and every time he's come back from an injury, they've put him right back out there. At the three, it's interesting. Right now, if I had to guess, I think KCP might stay at the three, even when Rui comes back, and Kuzma would be bumped to the bench. But I don't think that's their best lineup. I think their best lineup would have Kuzma at the three and Rui at the four. And the reason I say that is because if you do that, then the bench really falls into place logically. Because if KCP is in the starting lineup, then he can't be your backup two. And then I think you get a little thin at the guard position, particularly behind Bradley Beal. You know, right now it looks like they're going to be willing to rely on Raul Neto and Aaron Holiday as a backup backcourt. And I think those guys could play pretty well together. Obviously, it's undersized, but they're going to be pretty good defensively and they can both shoot. And I think either way, if all things are equal between those guys, you got to find ways to get them on the floor. But I kind of like KCP better in that backup two guard role. And if he's starting, he can't be in that. So that's how I expect it to go right now. Kuzma is the starting four when the season starts, but then replaced by Hachimura. And I guess KCP will stay at the three unless they want to bump him out.
Chase, one thing we've learned is expect the unexpected with this team. Like, who could have predicted that Robin Lopez would be one of the surest centers last year for the Wizards? That hook shot, I mean, it was money. It was almost 9 for 10 he would make on those hook shots. And then you never knew what position you would play as a player. I think Neto said that at an early press conference. Like, I didn't know if I was going to be the four or the three with Brooks. So we don't know what to expect. But give us some sleepers. I honestly think if health comes into play, like if Holiday or Beal or even Dinwiddie become injured, I think Cassius Winston is a good floor general and he could be a sleeper pick for somebody who is a key contributor where you didn't see it coming. What do you think?
Well, Cassius, yeah, I think he's got a bright future. And it looks like his hamstring injury is clearing up. I actually saw him at practice today kind of doing more than we've seen him do. So that's good. You know, they didn't feel that he was ready for a top 3-point guard role, but I think the hope is that by the end of the season, he is. You know, Aaron Holiday's contract year, Raul Neto contract year. So maybe Cassius can be one of those guys next season, but maybe by the end of the season, he can play a factor. In terms of sleepers, I do think Aaron Holiday setting up for a pretty good year. I think Montrezl Harrell at this point might constitute a sleeper because it seems like a lot of fans are focusing on Daniel Gafford for good reason and also Thomas Bryant. It seems like a lot of people think that Harrell might be the odd man out, but I don't think that's going to happen. I don't know if Kispert's going to make a major impact this year as a rookie. So as a sleeper, I think I might highlight at this point, Aaron Holiday. You know, he was impressive throughout the preseason, and I think he's really motivated in a contract year. And I think he's a smart player, a capable player who, you know, 2 years ago had a pretty good season, shooting about 39% from three. Those numbers dropped last year, but I think he's like a prime candidate for a bounce back season because he's got all the reason in the world to be motivated.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene, part of Amplifier Media, that at amplifiermedia.com. Right now, we are chatting with Chase Hughes, NBC Sports Washington's Wizards reporter. So, Chase, you said that CRISPR may not get a lot of playing time. Really? Because I actually like the young boy. I am actually a fan of him. I think he's more athletic than what people say. For some strange reason, this athletic card is thrown out there. He's athletic. he can athletic. Shoot. Dude, I watched him in Gonzaga. Dude is very athletic. He'll bang on him. He's very athletic. And he can shoot. I think that somebody, the Wizards, I would think that would want to play.
Well, I just think right now, like, there's 11 players that are going to be fighting for 10 spots, and it just looks like he might be that 11th guy. Okay. You know, the last couple games of the preseason, we saw a better look at the rotation, and he didn't really have as much of a secure role as, like, Davis Bertans did at the moment. Now, things will change over the course of the season, but I also would go back to – there's a few comments that Wes Unseld Jr. has made leading up to the preseason – and throughout the preseason about how Corey Kispert's, you know, maybe not going to play a ton to start out. I did hear the Wizards don't think that he's going to be spending any time in the G League this year with the Go-Go. You know, maybe that ends up happening. But I do think people need to keep in mind, like, we talk about all this wing depth and, oh, how are they going to play everybody? This is the Wizards. This is the NBA. There's going to be injuries. But you guys know the Wizards get killed by injuries every year. It's probably going to take care of itself. I mean, like, one guy gets injured, maybe two, and all of a sudden Corey Kispert might be in the starting lineup. So I think he's going to play plenty over the course of this season. And, you know, he plays a position on the wing where, you know, maybe you can slide him over to the two. Right now it looks like he's ideal as a three, but maybe there's ways he can find his way into the lineup. But certainly you look at the shooting, the catch and shoot ability from long range. He's pretty good at catching goes too, like catching closeout defenders off balance. And he's a pretty good cutter. I think defense will be the biggest question for him going into the season. He's probably going to have a heck of a time trying to keep up with NBA wings. Yeah. But offensively, I think he'll find his way. You know, he made a few shots off the dribble in the preseason. He's got a skill set that I think he's rounding out, that as long as his threes are falling, he'll stay on the floor and he'll have the opportunity to do that.
Not many teams play defense. I mean, players play defense in the NBA anyway. That's another overrated thing too. Believe me. I hate when people talk about young players that way, like, oh, their defense has to get better. James Harden is one of the best players in the league, and he plays a lick of defense. He used to play defense, but he plays a lick of defense nowadays. So
But under Wes Unseld Jr., you might have to play some defense.
You have to.
Unless you can score like Harden.
Yeah, he's gonna have to play some defense. You definitely right. So I want to go back to something you said about the tier where the Wizards are at with Toronto. They're playing Toronto and they're playing the Pacers. They're both, like, to me, on their similar tiers. How important is to set the tone early?
I think it's really important. You know, the Wizards want to get off to a hot start. Whether they can probably depends on the chemistry that they've built in the preseason. You know, Kyle Kuzma was pretty honest the other day, saying it might take 20 games for them to all get on the same page. But these are the teams that you're going to have to be vying for playoff position with, right? You might have to have a better head-to-head record against the Raptors and the Pacers to stay out of the play-in tournament or to, you know, be the seventh or eighth seed so you get home court and only have to win one game if you do go into the play-in tournament. You know, the Raptors are an interesting test for the reasons I specified earlier. I think the Pacers are an interesting test because – they're well coached and they're probably a better team than they were last year, but also they have some size down low with Domantas Sabonis and Miles Turner. And that's like a low key question for the Wizards going into this year. Their tallest players are 6'10" and those guys aren't exactly bangers, you know, like Daniel Gafford's kind of a skinny guy. You know, Thomas Bryant has kind of a skinny lower body. The Wizards' biggest players are 6'10" and not like built like defensive ends. So if you're playing big teams, and that's not even one of the biggest teams. You know, obviously if you play Giannis or Joel Embiid or Nikola Jokic, like that's going to be a thing. And like, even when you play like the Brooklyn Nets, like Kevin Durant's going to be taller than everyone on your team. So it's might be something that I think they may have to look to address midseason. You know, they may have to look at, obviously you have to make midseason moves, but I wouldn't be surprised if they go into the deadline being like, all right, we got to add some size to our front court.
No doubt, no doubt. So you mentioned play-in, and it's funny because somebody texted me when Bill made the comment, hey, I want to lead this franchise to a deep playoff run. Somebody said, you mean deep play-in run. Like, it was a joke. Like, this team is not built for a deep playoff run. This is what somebody said to me. This is not me. I'm just saying. So what are your expectations for this season? Are we looking at another play-in tournament spot for the Wizards, or are they going to secure a playoff spot? And what's that? Is that the top six or seven? Or is 7 through 10 the play-in?
I think it's gonna be tough to get in the top six. Yeah, okay. I think it'll go very similar to last year. Hopefully steadier throughout the course of the regular season. Right. But right now, I predict them as the 8 seed, and then get into the playoffs by winning the play-in tournament. So I guess it's the answer's yes to both. I think they'll get into the playoffs, but they got to go through the play-in tournament first. But you know, it's going to be a tough conference. Like, it's going to be deeper than it's been in a while. I think to get that 8 seed, you may need a 500 record. So even if the Wizards are better than they were last year, I think they might end up exactly where they were. Now, hopefully they don't go to 15 games under 500 and have to climb all the way back by going 17-6 down the stretch of the season. But I think they're going to be steadier throughout the course of the year because of their depth and because of the defense that I think will eventually round into form.
Interesting, man. I like the Hawks, of course. I'm not sure about the Knicks. I'm just insane in comparison to the Wizards. You know what I'm saying? Like, there are teams, we just mentioned the Pacers, the Raptors, that we know the Wizards can compete with. The Wizards played so well, though, against the top teams last year, the Jazz, the Nuggets. They have potential, Brooklyn. So, and Brooklyn is to me, they're the one that I'm like, if injuries or chemistry don't come together, they might not be where we think they are. So the Wizards have a chance. I like what the Heat did. Chicago made good moves on paper, but I'm just saying, I'm not going to predict play-in just yet. I think the Wizards might surprise some people because of the new coach, because of the new defensive scheme. And like you said, you've been using the word professional, and that's a big change. That's a huge change for a franchise that has run a certain way over the past 5 years. So I'm not going to say play-in just yet, but play-in is not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing, Ray. It's not a bad thing. It can happen. Unless you lose it, then it sucks. Yeah. I'm not a fan of play-in game. I'm all about just straight 8. I don't get the whole thing.
I like the play-in game, but I think it's like too complicated. The win is twice and get in. Just
thank you. Ja Morant messed it up for everybody.
They should do it just like baseball. Just have like wild card games.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. Or just have it with the 8th seed. Don't include the 7th seed. Like, just let the 7th seed have its spot. You know what I mean? But I like you. Like, baseball, a wild card, that makes a lot of sense.
I'm a Wizards fan, though. I'm a Wizards fan. I can't hide it sometimes.
So I know you can't. Obviously,
I gotta be careful.
I know. I heard it about not being the playing game. So I heard it already. So I heard it. It's okay.
I'm not ready to make that leap yet. That's
I know. I can tell. I got you. I vibe you, man. I did, bro. All right. Hey, Chase. Thanks for being on the show. Before we let you go, how can folks reach out to you on social media?
Yeah, appreciate it. You can hit me up on Twitter at Chase Hughes NBCS.
Hey, Chase, we appreciate you being on. Hope we can have you on again during the season.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Let's do it for sure.
All right. Thanks, Chase.
Thanks, guys.
That was dope. You know, the Urban Sports, you know, it's putting out bangers. All right. We are not making our Week 7 NFL picks on this show, but you can check out our picks on the Football Garbage Time website. Just go to www.footballgarbagetime.com. All right, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and Google Podcasts. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. You can check out the home of the Urban Sports Scene, Ampire Media at amppiremedia.com. And this show can be found on Podcast DC. Download the Podcast DC app to hear all of the Ampire Media shows as well as other great content. Hey, thank you all for listening. Thank you, Candy Waller, for dropping the knowledge about the Washington Football Team. And also, gotta again give out a special shout out to the homie Chase Hughes from NBC Sports Washington. He's the Washington Wizards reporter. I want to appreciate him for being on. All right, y'all. Thanks for listening again. You've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene for ages. Yiddig deuces. Hey, Mega, get this out, big homie.